This is HPR episode 2671 entitled, Algae Farming with the Searcher. It is hosted by Mirror Shades and is about 40 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is, the searcher educates us all on the benefits of algae farming.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Listening to Hack Republic Radio. I'm Mirror Shades, and today I've traveled 100 miles below the surface of the earth to the secret lair of D-Searcher.
And we're going to talk about weird stuff.
What are we talking about?
I'm guessing we're going to talk about the weird green fluids growing by your window.
They got to be more specific.
A couple of weird green fluids, but a lot of this is Nanochoropsis. It's an algae. It's kind of like something called pond scum, but it's not. It's actually, you know how the oceans are green sometimes? It's that stuff. It has pretty good properties to it. They use it to extract carbon dioxide from the air, because it's a plant. Photosynthesizes. So it's green chlorophyll and all that. But you can actually grow it for fish food, and it's easy to grow. You use F2 fertilizer. That's just what it's called. Some people use Miracle-Gro, but it kind of raises questions of what all is in it. But this stuff is kind of balanced just for algae. They've been using it for 60-something years. Through colleges and stuff, and you kind of research talking about algae, is going to talk about that too. You can get it at fish supply stores, Amazon. This particular one is a Fritz Pro Aquatics two-part solution. They keep the organic and non-organic compounds separate, but you mix it up, you shoot it in, and stir it up. Throw some starter in and bubble some air through it.
So how much does the F2 cost? Like, what does that run you for?
10 or 20 bucks, but yeah, the amount that you use is so minuscule that will last a year, if not more. Because, let's see, these are, I'm checking the size. Fluid ounces per part, so that's 32 ounces, and the amount that you feed them is going to be a quarter milliliter per feeding, and it's like once a week.
Oh wow.
So you've got some time. I just use like syringes you pick up at like Tractor Supply kind of farming shops. And you just measure out a tiny dose. The way I do it, I have soda bottles, 2-liter soda bottles. I'll rinse them out, make sure they're clean. I actually leave them by the windows with the thought that, they generate ozone, they kind of sterilize it. And then when I'm ready to split the culture, I'll take my starter. Originally, I got like a 12-ounce starter from another distributor, and it's real dark green. And then what you do is you put it into two different batches. You split it half and half, and then you add salt water, saline, and add a little bit of FQ and leave it in sunlight and bubble air into it. And then it'll darken over the course of about a week. And then, so in my 2 liters, it starts out, you know, kind of lower towards the bottom. And then I'll double the amount that's in there by just adding more water, and it gets darker, and then I'll double it again. So after about 2 or 3 doublings, it's a full 2 liter, and then I'll split it off into another one. So then it's, you know, half and half. And keep doing that. I've got 5 going right now. Let's see, 2 of them's mostly full, and then I've got others that I'm just... The thought is, instead of doubling them up, adding more water, I'm just going to go for a darker color so that when I do split it later on, it'll have more of a culture to kind of start off strong.
Cool. So, like, to get started, like this setup, what do you think the initial investment cost is? You said it's like about $20.
Yeah, $10 or $20 for the fertilizer, and that's going to last you a long time. Soda bottles, I mean, that's,
yeah,
we drink soda anyway, you know, just rinse them out real good. Make sure there's no residue or anything. Preferably the clear ones. You don't want to go for like green or actually green might work because it'll block out the green light, and which they don't eat anyway. They don't use green light. That's why they're green. You do need an air bubbler, which you go down to any, you know, shopping center that sells, like, you know, pet supplies. If they sell aquarium stuff, they're going to have essentially air pumps just to, like, bubble through fish tanks. And you just get one of those. You get the tubing that goes with it. I think 25-foot of tube was like maybe $8, and honestly, I'm probably using only maybe 8 foot of that. So I've got backups. If if they get too dirty, I can just change up to a new one. It's no problem. I do have a splitter attached with valves on it, so I can, you know, select which one gets more or less bubbles as it needs. I forget how much that was. But I mean, none of this is really super expensive. Then just big bag of salt.
To ballpark, maybe $50 or something.
Ballpark, I'd say right at between 40 and 50. Shop around, check online. A lot of this came from, you know, Amazon. Other parts where we found that it was cheaper to get, like, at either Walmart, or there's a fish shop that actually had some of the parts real cheap. But what you want to do is you get a tube that will fit to the bottom of the 2 liter, and so that's about 2 foot, somewhere in through there. Cut your tube section for that. Make sure it hits the bottom. You don't have to put an air stone or anything. You're looking for, like, large bubbles. Small bubbles will stir it up too much. And they don't seem to like that. Mm-hmm. And then you want to put, like, cotton or some kind of wadding, so additional air doesn't get in. You don't get dust particles going into the solution.
Just up on the cork top off.
Yeah, you just kind of want to cork top. Some people will drill out holes in the cap that normally goes with it.
Yeah.
And they'll feed it through there, and then they'll, like, do a sealant with it. That's fine. I've never needed that. I do like the convenience of just being able to take the top off conveniently with just a bit of wadding, because once a week I do feed them just with a syringe. And every once in a while, certain ones, they'll start to separate out. They'll start turning clear, then you'll get some particles on the bottom. Those you just shake up and give it a bit more sunlight. It usually happens right after feeding. They'll get
they'll kind of shock when you first feed them. So you have to make sure you're not just putting it right in one spot and not shaking it up. It's actually good to put it in a separate container, kind of dilute it and then add it. So if you're splitting them, you want to actually put the fertilizer in the secondary batch before you add the algae to it. But yeah, as long as you've got, you know, the tubes going in it, bubbling through, you're looking at about 3 bubbles a second. You can do more or less, just kind of play with it. You don't want to froth on top, but it's just as long as you're getting the CO2 bubbling through, just air, or you know, the fertilizer like once a week and plenty of sunlight, they just do well. They thrive. They start to get clear.
Why would somebody want to? So what is your purpose here? It's not just like some homemade science experiment.
Like. Well, I mean, largely I do like it as a science experiment. Mm-hmm. Some people have houseplants. I just have a beautiful green jasmine algae. It's kind of peaceful to sit out here as I eat my breakfast cereal, just sit there and watch them, ask them how their day is. But no, there actually is a commercial use for it. Mainly, you can sell them back to fish stores because algae is essentially fish food. And depending on what kind of tank setup they have, like if I specifically run for saltwater tanks, so this being phytoplankton is used to feed copepods, which are zooplankton, and those in turn are used to feed corals. So by having a constant supply of phytoplankton to feed copepods, you can grow corals, which are actually notoriously hard to grow, which means that they're pretty expensive, which is good business. They'll sit there and, as long as they get the food stock coming in, they'll grow coral and then split it, and some pieces go for $1,000. Between, you know, like $50 and $1,000, depending on the type and variety. But some people just do that as their source of income. They just grow coral.
I may have to start growing coral.
Yeah, I'm not to that point yet. I'm
the still wrong just racket. Just day job crap.
Yeah, I'm just getting the phytoplankton going because you know, it started out with my cousin. He's got a saltwater aquarium. So I'm just selling it to him, and he's selling the excess to the fish store, and, you know, I get part of the profit share on that. And we're going to start growing copepods here in a couple weeks, and then, you know, that's kind of has its own thing. They're grown very much the same way, but you have to monitor different types of bacteria, because they need good bacteria from an actual aquarium. So that process, from my understanding, is that you take rocks and you put them in the aquarium, you know, fish go around. Over time, the rocks will just kind of soak up all the bacteria, and you put those into the copepods, and it kind of creates a more balanced ecosystem.
Hmm.
But with the algae, you start sterile, and then you just put, you know, starter packs of algae in there, and then they just grow, and you keep splitting them and doubling them. So that's more what I like, because as long as you don't have cross contamination, it's just a beautiful green. Yeah. Also filters the air.
looks a bit like Mountain Dew.
Yeah.
Flat Mountain Dew. Except for over there, because that one's a little darker.
Yeah, that one's been brewing much longer. That's the color you actually want. It's like that nice dark hue to it. The rest, they're pretty healthy, but they haven't been going as long. So they start out, you know, kind of like a lighter color. Almost, how would you describe it? almost like a 7-Up, a little darker. Or, yeah, about like Mountain Dew. And then it darkened into like a, almost like a Carmelite old Gatorade.
You have to use soda references because the...
they're in soda bottles.
Yeah.
And also it tastes like Gatorade because you can, in fact, drink it. It's actually fairly nutritious. The
Joe
problem is...
Researcher's health tonic.
Yeah.
It's on the side of the room.
No, it's actual food stuff. It's non-toxic. It's about like a tea. You know, kombucha, which is like fermented tea. It's about like that. It's not bad. I do run the saline content a bit high. You're looking at a specific gravity of about 1.20 to 1.28 is the range that I try to keep it. But I also go a bit high on it because I could always cut it down with additional water for when I take it over to my cousin. I'll drop the saline down to match his tape, which is about, he keeps his about 1.22. So for me, it's easier to just add more water than it is to, mix salt up and try to measure it that way. Another thing that helps is to have a hydrometer, which is just, the one that I have just kind of measures it by the density, as far as like it's got like a floater in it. So as you add water with a bit of saline, the buoyancy will kind of show you right where it's at. And those aren't expensive at all. They're $10.
And they sell those at homebrew stores.
Yeah.
So said the guy who makes his own beer from time to time.
Oh, yeah.
I don't have a hydrometer though. It's sad. Like, I don't care if there's alcohol.
I'd like to get those big, big carboil. What? Carboils? Carboils? Something?
Carboil. Oh, yeah. Big glass.
Yeah.
Carboil, yeah.
Get those to grow some Fido with. Because right now, it's like each bottle is like 2 liters, so.
You can ramp up your amount you're making.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can get those. You can buy those at homebrew stores. They sell a lot of people buy them for beer and wine making, mm-hmm. So they're like, I want to say they're like 5 gallons or something.
Yeah. Mm. Five. That's, I think some of them go up to like 10 or 15.
Yeah, you can get different sizes, I believe. You can order them off Amazon too, but I imagine the shipping on that's going to be pretty high because they're heavy and
yeah. They're
also glass.
Yeah.
Might not be.
Part is red with kind of shards. But yeah, like from a monetary aspect, the starter for like 16 ounces is like $20 for two of them, so it's like, I guess 32 or 12 or 16. But yeah, I think like for 24 is like 24 ounces is like $20.
Jeez Louise.
But to buy them out of the aquarium shop that I'm selling to, they're selling like 7 ounce bottles for like between 7 and 10, really. So, I mean, if you're looking like a dollar an ounce, something like that, just depending on who you talk to and all that. So, and it, you just sit it next to the window and it grows as long as you have plenty of light, so.
And I'll take, here in a minute, if you don't care, I'll snap a picture of yourself.
Oh, yeah.
And then we'll stick that in the show notes.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, be sure to get, the bowling system just to... Mm-hmm. But yeah, it doesn't take much to set up. They're just kind of beautiful to watch.
And then, I'll get, is there a specific use for the Gatorade bottles, or are they just going to be...
Well, the thought is, because I've built like, all kinds of bottles, just when you're growing stuff in bottles, you just kind of hang on to them just in case. The thought was I was going to have those as like starters, so I'm just going to like pour off some just to... kind of keep them handy, because you want to keep a few small samples in the fridge just in case, for whatever reason, you get what's called a culture crash, where it turns yellow and clear and separates out and it basically just dies on you. That can happen, It can happen for different reasons, and that's kind of like the risk involved, is to try to make sure that everything's in balance. But as long as you're just not doing anything wild and crazy with it, it should be fine. But if for whatever reason they do crash, you've got backups in the fridge, because they'll keep. I've got some in there for the past month, and they start to clear up a bit, but you just shake them up, and they're good to go. They're just kind of in hibernation. But this one right here, actually both of these, I had in the fridge for about a week, and then I put them back on to see if I could darken them up a bit. Because once this other one started getting real dark, I kind of moved the goalposts on how I want them, because the darker you can get them, the easier it is to split them, the more lucrative it is to sell them to the fish stores, because they want that darker color. It's more potent. The guy that I'm talking to now, the other guy that he gets his from, it's real clear. They're not doing a good count with theirs. They're pretty much just diluting the product down to nothing, and then trying to pass it off. So we're going for a better product, so he'll essentially come to us. So there's a bit of a cutthroat industry.
When you're selling those, do you, like, I guess, are you just taking them up to the aquarium store and the soda bottles and be like, here you go?
One of them, yeah. What I'll do is I'll take the 2-liter over to my cousin's house, and he's got a deal where he can actually get empty bottles with a label, and he'll rebottle them in, like, smaller versions. So, like, his is, like, 12-ounce bottles, and we'll sell that to the store. The two stores that we talked to, one of them, they want the pretty labels on it, you know, their thing, you know, look real nice. And so that's mostly who we're trying to piece with the labels and stuff. The other one, we essentially the same bottles, but we don't have to put the labels on them. We often do, just to make it look nicer, but he's actually been known to just sell them out of, like, milk jugs, so.
Not a lot of regulation on that, then.
Really not. I mean, it's just stuff that's grown out of people's houses.
So you don't have to, like, you don't have to show proofs of any sort of, like,
no,
quantitative, like, this is how much algae is in the fluid.
No, and that's something I do want to address, because I do have a microscope, and the thought is you can get a graduated slide, you know, it's marked off in, like, 10 nanometer, like a little grid, and you'll put a sample on there, and you'll look at it, and you'll do, like, a randomized count of, like, so many grids. You can sit there and just manually count them, and then there's, like, equations to kind of figure out how much, you know, parts per million the sample is, and you kind of want to keep it consistent that way. The microscope I have doesn't get quite as focused as it needs to be. I mean, the one I have seriously came out from the 80s. It's like one of my first Christmases. They're just like, yeah, we got you a microscope. I'm like, I'm not for it, but okay. And, you know, they've been some improvements since. So I want to get a better microscope so I can actually do more accurate counts. But right now we're just going by the color standard, which is, like, if it looks like a dark green, if it looks like a, you know, a dark leaf, it's kind of what you're going for, just like, you know, the color of grass. But, yeah, so many people just like selling, like, something that just looks like blackened seawater. And it's just like, not even really green at all. And we're trying to do a little better than that. But, yeah, there's some initiatives trying to increase the phytoplankton population down in, like, the tropics. Because just through, like, you know, different things like just general pollution, the population of phytoplankton is diminished, and then that kind of causes problems with, like, the food chain, you know, carbon, it doesn't suck out as much carbon, so it's basically, let's say, it's deforestation, but it's, you know, an ocean, and that's something we don't often think about. And depending on the articles you read, something like 60% of our carbon cycle is actually through the ocean.
Yeah. I read that somewhere. There's, like, the breathable air we get is more dependent on the ocean than even the rainforest. Because, you know, when we were kids growing up, that's what they kind of heard. The rainforest.
Don't cut down the trees. Yeah. And but now we're seeing that it's actually more to do with the ocean. And, you know, just, it has, like, forage effects. So, you know, just kind of, you know, grow some algae just for the benefit of all.
Anything else you want to cover?
We can talk about the different types. There's you don't just want to go out and like, scoop up algae and then try to culture.
Well, why not?
Some algae is pretty toxic. Specifically, just pretty much any type of pollen scum you want to avoid. I mean, yeah, it probably looks, you know, nice, pretty green, maybe some brown, but it's you don't want that. This is specifically a Nanoporopsis, and it's non-toxic. It's, you know, it's all around. It's good, hardy kind of algae. Grows real good, really well. There's another strand that does pretty well. I think it's I'm gonna mess up the names. Spiro something. Google it. But that one's
another one
that's been known to do pretty well. I think they use that as a food additive. Maybe they extract sugars from it. Not too sure. There's some research using algae as a biofuel. So you hear stories where people can run their, you know, diesel truck off of French fry grease. Well, you could also technically run on algae. There's a reduction process, and you don't just want to like put salt water in it. But you get the actual algae mass, you dewater it, and then there may be an additional process as far as like stripping cell walls and just going for the lipids. But people do make combustible oil from algae. So that's something that a lot of people's experimenting with now, and that's what I'd like to get into. But right now I'm just getting the process going and, you know, making sure I can get a nice dark color, increase the amount. Starting from 12 ounces, I've probably got 3 or 4 liters. Well, no, 6 or 7 liters right there, probably. Rough estimate.
Cool.
So, the goal is to have a gallon a week that I can just, in addition to just what I'm growing. Because right now I'm just doubling it up. I've got one I can go sell right now, but I've been trying to, instead of just doing one bottle at a time and, you know, selling, you know, the split, I'm trying to have a full rack in constant production. So I've been holding on to more instead of selling them off. And then once I got my numbers up, I'd like to switch over to the larger glass jugs and, you know, start doing gallons at a time. But stuff to look forward to in the future.
How'd you get the initial culture or whatever that you used to?
Amazon.
Oh, really? You can order that off Amazon?
It's, you gotta adjust your search term. You can look for phytoplankton and find it, but Nanoporopsis with an A-N-N-O Chloropsis.
Yeah.
C-H-L-O-R-E-S.
Poor spelling is a sign of high.
Google will correct you and recommend, but yeah, you can find a lot of distributors on Amazon. I'd like to get to the point where I can just, like, you know, sell my own on Amazon, but I've got a pretty much a good distribution just through my cousin and their contacts with the fish shop. So,
well, I guess we can later. You can shoot me an email with some links. I'll throw those in the show notes. We can do, like, probably do, like, the Amazon stuff that you can buy. Maybe a Wikipedia link. I don't know. We'll find something to put in there.
Yeah,
that's informative.
I'll forward over some knowledge about it.
And we'll throw all that in the show notes.
Yeah, they taste about like Gatorade, just from all the salt.
I don't believe you.
I mean, we can have some over the coast. I think
some kind of algae or yeast based spread, like Vegemite. Is that like a yeast? Yeah. Or is that like an algae or
something?
Something like that.
Some kind of. We can find out. It's 2018.
If only there was this thing where we could just, you know, search for we could Google it, Bing it, or Yahoo, or WebCrawler. Ask Jeeves next time you see Jeeves. Go ahead and ask him to answer a question.
I kind of miss Ask Jeeves, really.
Yeah. There's a lot of Easter eggs, too. You could ask his thoughts on other search engines.
So, you might be interested to know that our far-reaching supercomputer system that I pulled from my pocket says that Vegemite is one of several yeast extract spreads. So
take Vegemite, put it in a jug, and you can culture essentially beer at that point. Vegemite-based beer. Yeah.
Beer is an interesting topic of its own. So it's an important staple item. A lot of people don't realize this is kind of funny, a little off topic, but like historically, the archaeologists used to believe that human beings first began in the culture of grains to make bread, when in fact now it looks like they may have done it to make beer.
Yeah.
And it was a very sustaining, and of course ancient beer was thick and porridgey, not like the beer we drink today. But it's unfiltered and unpasteurized. It has a lot of vitamins and crap in it that gets lost in that process.
Because I can totally see that. Like as far as like oats, like oatmeal probably came first. You know, just people just eating, you know, essentially grass at this point.
I would imagine too. Some of this was accidental because they don't have any way of preserving it, so it's going to ferment naturally.
Yeah, exactly. It's so they're just eating like the like raw grains, and then somebody's like, "Well, add a bit of water to it." You know, they'll leave it out, and it kind of like, you know, kind of ferments a little bit. And they're like, "I kind of like it that way." And then eventually, they're just, you know, they're just doing it for like, you know, the actual beer and stuff. And then, you know, at some point later on, like, if you look at it, making bread is kind of a fermentation process. It's kind of about the same, but it's like solid instead of liquid.
And for those of you who do not have the benefit of having worked in a pizza place like we have,
yeah,
when the dough starts to get old, it smells like beer, does
it
not?
It really does. And,
I remember we would have to throw it away like at a certain point when somebody would make too much. Do you remember those days? We'd have an entire like 55-gallon like garbage can full of dough.
Throw it out in the dumpster and go back later and throw out the cardboard, and it would just reek, like hit you right in the face, and you feel drunk just by opening it up. It was
so heavy too, like we had to, oh man, it took like two people to lift that thing up. Oh, those were the days.
The Burkle. Like, why is it called that? That's just what it's called. Burkle.
Actually, the brand, I think, was the brand of the dough mixer was Burkle. They call it the Burkle.
You mean the dough mixer? No, it's the Burkle. Like, all right.
I haven't heard that in years.
Yeah, you learn something new every day working at pizza places.
You really do. It was an interesting cross-section of human culture that would come in there. Because you would have the really poor, really, really poor people that are looking for a cheap way to feed their family, and then you have the rich people who are skin flints that don't want to buy. And yeah. So everybody came in and bought this cheap, crappy pizza.
And I was kind of considered pizza to be more of a luxury than a staple, but you work for a brand that their pride and joy is the cheapest pizza in town, and
We won't mention their name because we're professionals, but it's very Romanesque.
There's a reason Brutus got to stab him.
Yeah. But yeah. Beer. Algae, beer, and pizza.
Actually.
All important.
Now I need to figure out how to make an algae-based beer.
I'm sure it's... I don't know if it would come out to be beer. I don't know what the dividing line. That's another thing I should probably mention. Like, The weird thing is like, you know, typically we associate wine with, you know, finery and, yeah, and snooty people, and beer with being like the low class, low brow, like commoner's drink or whatever. But the funny thing is beer is actually harder to produce than wine, mm-hmm, and it's more complex and it has a more complex flavor profile than wine does. Wine is just fermented fruit juice, basically, and beer is a whole bunch of crap that is very hard to... I'm not going to go into it here because it would make an entire episode of its
own. Well, yeah, like with the hops and stuff, like people always forget the hops.
Yeah.
Or it's like, oh, it's basically wheat and rye. You know? But, yeah, the hops, the funny thing is, do you know they're actually in the same classification as, like, you know, cannabis? It's basically the same family of plants. And if you, like, see pictures of them harvesting, you're like, that's... yeah, that's, I can see that.
It's interesting. The wort, they make the wort out of whatever that stuff is, like my brain, my whole brain's not working, having a brain fart, but it's the boil that crap down to make the, get the sugar out of it, whatever it is, brain's not working, but
like mash.
Yeah, it's, well, mash is in whiskey, and it's called a wort beer. It's the same, I guess, principle. And then hops, there's like two different kinds of hops, and they can be added in different parts of the beer making process, which is a little bit more complicated than wine. Wine is super easy. You just throw some fruit juice and water in a big jug with some yeast, mm-hmm, and make sure it's got a means for the CO2 to escape, and then you're good.
And the weird thing is, like, there's not really a lot of variety in wines. Like, you have, like, you know, Chardonnays and, like, Pinots and Merlots and, you know, Champagnes and things like that, but it's like, from my understanding, a lot of those names are just kind of, like, where they were originally grown. Like, it's like saying, like, hey, I want some West Coast versus some East Coast kind of stuff.
I like,
but like the recipe's still essentially the same.
Yeah.
Like, with beers, I mean, you could have it based out of oats, or you can have it based out of like
wheat, or
there's
different kinds. There's like stouts and ales, and the thing different, I didn't know this, but the thing that differentiates like an ale from a lager has to do with the yeast that they use to ferment with, mm-hmm, and whether it's on the top or the bottom.
I was like porter. Yeah. Just a real kind of dark.
Yeah, like stouts are like that.
Stouts. I love a piece of Guinness. Yeah. A lot of the darker color on that, I think they roast the hops, so give them a nice little flavor to them.
The lighter beers too, but it just depends. Like, I don't know. I'm not a big, like, right now, IPA is this really popular thing, and I just don't like it. I don't like bitter and hops at the end. It's what gives it that really bitter flavor. It's just, which is weird because you'd think I'd like the bitter flavor because I'd like stouts, but I don't understand it either. It's just
the,
what I like.
The thing is, stouts, like, if they're really done right, like, you don't taste the bitterness.
Yeah.
It like tastes dark but not bitter, and that's kind of hard. It's hard to describe flavors really. But
there's a it's weird too. If you take a Guinness, like I like the extra stouts better than the stout. Because to me, the regular stout tastes a little flat, and if you get the extra stouts and pour them into a glass, because I don't know what it is, I suspect it has something to do with the way it washes back over the whole tongue and it gets all the taste buds, but I could be completely wrong about that, I don't know, but it does seem to change the flavor profile pouring it into a glass as opposed to try to drink it out of a bottle.
Well, a lot of our flavor comes through our sense of smell rather than, you know. So you drink beer and it tastes bitter, but like, unless you're actually able to smell it, you don't get the full effect to it. And some say that depending on the shape of the glass, it's going to affect it. Like,
if you can get your nose in there.
Yeah. Well, there's one, it was fancy beer. It was like Hoegaarden or something like that. And it was like, it had this weird floral bouquet to it. Like, it smelled of flowers. And they suggested putting it in like a hexagonal glass, so when you kind of, you know, sift it, kind of stir it around, it creates like these vortexes off like the sides of the glass. It really stirs up the bouquet, and it's just like, you know, when you're drinking a beer that they recommend, you know, water shape of glass, you know you're going to hobnob with some fancy.
It's a pretentious
beer. Good stuff, though. All
right. Maybe we should, I don't know where we're at. We're at the 40-minute mark. We should probably call it a day. Laters.
I mean, I could talk about open source projects, but you may want to split it into a separate file.
Open source beer.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.